Yes, that was Ebony and Ivory there for your listening pleasure. That harkens back to a simpler time whenever people they had this simple idea. They just wanted to all be treated equally and live together in harmony. Quaint, I know. Now, a lot of those even same people that were around that time, they don't want to be equal. They want to be superior. They don't want to live in harmony. They want you to basically do what they want out of guilt. And I think it's a farce. I think these so-called civil rights leaders of today are an embarrassment to civil rights. They're not, they're racist and they're bigots. People like Mark Lamont Hill, people like Al Sharpton, name them, Jesse Jackson. These people are all, they all deal in racism. They're all their power came from not trying to end racism, but exploiting it for themselves, because racism is a racket. It's a tool that politicians use to keep power. It's a very powerful tool as well. It's interesting, and I wasn't even going to go here, but I was listening to Ben Shapiro earlier, and he was talking about this study. I don't know. It was in some kind of, I don't know. We don't do specifics here on this show. We just sort of give you vague recollections. If you want the facts, listen to Ben Shapiro. But it was a study that came out that basically said over the last 30 years that Democrats talk to minorities, they dumbed down the way they talk to minorities. Basically, it showed that conservatives actually, and it was some different, they looked at different speeches, but they also, I think, as part of the research, they would give these different political types the option to if they were emailing somebody and then they gave them like a what sounded like a white name, then they gave them what they sounded like a black name. And the Democrats would always not use big words, not speak very complex, make everything simple, and not talk about certain topics, whereas the conservatives just talked to everybody the same. So, it shows that the Democrat Party panders to racism. You know what I'm talking about, Dave? Am I crazy here?
Yes, you're crazy. No, I'm just kidding.
Both
No,
things can
man.
be true.
Both things can be true at the same time. You are right and you are crazy. No. Yeah, that it's there's a long history of using racism as a political tool for power, in the past, and they're still using it to this day. And it's just not taught or mentioned a whole lot without just getting poo-pooed or shut down in, mainstream media or even just in talking to, say, your, I don't know, your father-in-law or some other person who is leaning left.
Right, it's this is the this is sort of the great lie, or one of them, the Democrat Party it has used over and over and over again. If you look at, we'll just do sort of a brief history analysis here, because I want to dispel a major myth that a lot of people use in arguments. And this is something I was taught when I went to the University of Arkansas. I have a history degree. So this was something that I was taught by one of my history teachers that I had a fair amount of respect for. Now, it's when you get into liberal arts in any college, it's very heavily, you're talking about the far left, because, and this is going to be a little sidebar here. But universities, because they're funded by the federal government, are perfect little bubbles for like utopian socialism, right? Because you have professors that live on campus, they have a little apartment that's included with their job. They get, especially before they're like tenured and they have to write books in the direction, they're making a decent wage. When you're starting out, when you're like a master's student or like a doctorate student, you're, you know, living, working on campus while you're going to school, sort of an exchange for you living there. You're teaching classes, undergraduate classes. And then they give you a card that you go to eat, you know, when you're hungry. And they give you a very actual a little money, but they provide your basic needs there. And so the university is sort of the first and foremost, and you're spending most of your time there because you're either taking classes or you're teaching them. And then with whatever time you have, you are, you know, also there on campus, eating there, or living in your tiny little apartment. And so to a lot of those people, they're ardent socialists because they're living kind of the socialist dream, but they're far removed from reality because universities are little bubbles. You never have to really grow up. You never have to really, you know, it's this, you see those like 60-year-old professors that are wearing Chuck Taylors and, you know, they wear tie-dye shirts to class and stuff every day. And they've lived in a bubble their whole life. They've been a perpetual student their entire life. They were in high school, then they went to, you know, or whatever, you know, all elementary school and junior high and then high school. Then they went to college and then they just never left. And so it's those people a lot of times are far leftist because they didn't do it through capitalism. There's a lot of the way universities work is it's weird. The system that they use, the way that tenure and the way that departments work. It's not like the business world. It's very much like what you see in communism, what the ideal in the sort of dream. But the reality is this is funded by the federal government, funded by tax dollars. And also most universities get their big funding through athletics. And so you have, you know, the football program gets a lot of attention, and then everything filters down to the science and, you know, math and sciences from there. So it's really funny. And then a lot of it comes from wealthy benefactors of people who have come through the university and have been great capitalists and, you know, gone on to run companies. And then they come back and they donate, they just give their money, to the university. So that's one of the reasons why you have this festering. Now you get into the business school, it's a little bit different. You have people that actually were in business. And so they're either, when I was in school, which was about 10 years ago, 10 plus, I was in school for like 6 years. I just kept switching my major. So, and ended up with a history degree. That's how a lot of people get history degrees. But when I was in school, a lot of the professors in the business school, you had conservatives there. There was where you actually would find it. But I bet now it's probably even less. But those were people who had actually been in the real world. So anyway, that's a quick side. I've always had that theory of why you have so many professors. Did you have any, did you, you got a kinesiology degree, so you even went a different route than me. What were the teachers like there in the kinesiology department?
Most of them were, you know, just kind of caught up in their own world, to be honest. There was actually the coolest professor I had, as far as, you know, she was a pretty big liberal. She wasn't crazy like some of them would be nowadays.
Right.
But she always enjoyed when I would, I wouldn't say challenge her, but give a different, you know, take on a few different things. You know, she had,
right.
It was around the time when 9/11 happened. She had a take on it and I had a take on it. And she would always tell me, you know, I'm glad you give a different take on things in class. Cause most people were, you know, I was like that in some classes where I would just go and the teacher would say bull crap or whatever, like some other classes, and I would just let it go because I didn't feel like arguing at the time. And it was a little different back then than it is now, probably.
It was a lot different back then. Yeah. You were allowed to disagree. Because of the same thing. Like, I was very outspoken supporter of the war, and there are some people I know didn't like it, but it wasn't, I never felt like I was bullied by professors. My brother just graduated, and he was constantly bullied. He was an outspoken Trump supporter. And you see today, these people are violent now.
Yeah. I
would have fucking whooped somebody's ass if they would have tried to intimidate me back then. I feel like, you know, I don't know. It's weird now. You see, like, there's these huge groups of these Antifa college students, mostly white kids, that are just angry. And then you'll only see, like, small pockets of conservatives. I you know, maybe it's just the difference of going to school at Berkeley, the University of Arkansas. But it still was a very liberal college. There's no question.
Yeah, I think the growth of the internet and social media has contributed to that in some ways, because again, it's kind of you're making your own bubble in a lot of ways. Like, back to what you were talking about, universities are these little bubbles of what socialism / communism is. You know, all of these, you know, it's not the quote unquote real world in America anyway. You know, I always like the quote from Ghostbusters where they get kicked out of the university, and Ray, played by Dan Aykroyd, he says, "Personally, I like the university. They gave us money and facilities, and we didn't have to produce anything." You've never been out of college. I've worked in the private sector. They expect results. You know, that quote, it always stuck with me. You know, he's talking to, you know, Bill Murray's character.
Right.
But, you know, that's really how it is. I mean, you just think, if you're in this own little bubble, like a university, and that's how things work, and you've been in it since you've been, you know, roughly 18, or some cases earlier, I mean, that's kind of all you know. You haven't had to go out into the real world and do some things. And, you know, I think in a way that this is probably for another podcast, but in a way, kind of people that get caught up in social media and the internet, now they get in their own little bubbles and believe, and even mainstream media, you know, and they believe that's maybe the majority of what people think. And it's just really not how America works at all. You know, we are a capitalist nation, and that's what made us great. And I'll argue that till the day I die.
Right. Well, it's just, you know, people are angry, and I think there's a difference. You know, you have people genuinely, well, let's do this. You know, what I intended, like I said, was do kind of a brief overview of how the Democrat Party has basically used the same tools throughout the years. Obviously, you had the Civil War. Lincoln was a Republican. I think that in Lincoln specifically, there are some arguments to be made. Okay, I don't think that it is. I don't think, from my own research, that it is black and white that you could say, well, that Lincoln, and, you know, is a direct line to Trump, because Lincoln was a Republican. I don't believe the parties flipped. I do think that over the years, they did change in certain ways, but not that they ever flipped. I don't think that Lincoln was really a Democrat. That is propaganda. But I do think there are some arguments to be made, because Lincoln obviously massively expanded the role of the federal government, and he really made the federal government's authority over states' rights. That was the battle there. Because if Lincoln had lost, I don't think the United States would have stayed separated had, like, the South won the Civil War. I think what you would have happened was eventually there would have been kind of an arbitration, and then they would have decided and I don't know the timeline here. This is obviously hypothetical. But I think that even if the South had won, what would have happened was that we would be, to the effect today would be not that we would be living in two different Americas, but that states' rights would be far more imminent, that the federal government wouldn't be able to play such a powerful role. I think that's what was on the line there. But I don't think that the South could have split off and thrived. I think that eventually it may have taken just a few years. It may have taken 20, 30 years. But I think that the two, that the country would have reunited to be a power. But I think that the effect today would be that the states. So, you know, Lincoln was, he was obviously, and it could be argued that it was the right thing to do, even though he was Republican, because ultimately he's trying to keep the country together. We were very divided back then, you know, divided more than we are so now. And part of it was, is that at that time we weren't as established. So, but I still think that Lincoln was a Republican. I don't think he was a Democrat. I think it's a little bit murkier, but right after the Civil War, race relations were actually, you know, I hesitate to say good, but what we as a society typically think of when we think of the bad parts of race relations, we're really thinking of, you know, post-Civil War, we're really thinking of Jim Crow. But Jim Crow didn't come around for like 30, 40 years after the Civil War. Directly after the Civil War, you actually had African-Americans that were elected to Congress and the Senate. You had African-Americans that held state offices. It wasn't until later. And this is where you can truly, truly see the Democrat Party, the party of the KKK, you know, the Dixiecrats. These were people in the South that the South was in such terrible shape post, not just post Civil War. That was a big part of it, but it also had to do with during the Civil War, England had and Europe had to look elsewhere for cotton. They found other ways to produce. The price of cotton rapidly fell. And so and also the plantation model died during the Civil War. So there was all these different factors. And slavery did have play a big part. The Civil War, just the war had a big part. But there were many factors. And so it wasn't like after the Civil War. And obviously, whenever Lincoln died, the North really sought to punish the South. So even 30, 40 years later, you had a lot of poor people, white and black. And the Democrats that had been in power, you know, it's this, if I'm the president of 10 people, or if I'm the Congress, that's a better representation. If I'm your congressman and I tell you that, hey, elect me because I'm going to make things better, which is what politicians do. Well, after things don't get better, what are you going to do? You're going to vote that person out. And if whites and blacks and different, you know, if all the people had from back then on looked at what their best interest was and said, look, we're all poor. We're a huge block. The poor people are actually should be the most powerful voting block because we, you know, we should be able to elect whoever we want. But the Dixiecrats, the Democrats back then, you know, it was, hey, look, they went to the poor white people. Look, you're poor, but at least you're not black. And you should really be worried about what they're going to do because they're going to rape your women. You know, they're going to steal from you. They want to kill you. They want to take what you have. They're evil people. They're ignorant people. All this. They. It's funny because all the bullshit that liberals chalk up to science, like there being more than two genders, or any of the global warming, you know, which that's a very complex thing in of itself. But so I'll stay away from that. But just as a general example, the way that liberals currently have bastardized science, they did back then too. There were plenty of research that said that black people were just inferior. They were ignorant people. And so it was the duty of these Democrats to protect their constituents. They used fear. They used fear and racism to divide. They also, it was a thing, hey, you're poor, but at least you're not like them. Now that's bad. At least you're one of us. And it worked, and that's where Jim Crow came from. Politicians having to put in practice the racism that they were using to divide people. Are you following me so far, Dave? Are you? I know you're fairly familiar with this stuff, but you have anything to add up to this point?
No, man. I think you're doing good, honestly. Just keep going.
Right,
like, there's a lot of people that, you know, just casual people that don't know a lot about history. I kind of include myself in some of that, you know. I've become a lot more knowledgeable of it over the past several years, but probably 5 or 10 years. But there's a lot of people that have never heard the take that racism was used as a political tool and still is today. You know, that concept is foreign to them. So, yeah, just keep going on it.
Well, and I'm just glossing over. There's obviously a lot more that there's also this, you know, everything's so complex. I think sometimes we oversimplify things to draw a moral equivalencies from. But anyway, so I'm not saying this is comprehensive, but it just gives you an idea. So that's where Jim Crow came from. Putting it into practice, them using racism, and then people who will network. If they're these evil, sick people, they shouldn't be able to swim with us. They shouldn't be able to eat with us. They're just disgusting. They looked down on them, and it was seen as okay. It's the same way that nowadays Democrats think it's okay to be racist against white people, to talk about people of color as it's glorified. You're better. You're better simply because of the color of your skin, and you're inherently evil because of the color of your skin. This was the same rhetoric that they had back then. It was just that they said that black people were inherently evil, and, you know, white people were to be glorified and lifted up. This was all, you know, identity politics isn't new. It's what the Democrats have always done. So whenever, and this is one of the main reasons I want to talk about this, is the argument that the party's flipped. Whenever somebody tells you that the party's flipped, you ask them when. Because it couldn't be before like 1964. 1964, I think, is when civil rights was passed. So you had Republicans that passed that. And those Republicans are still to this day considered Republicans. And then you had Democrats, prominent Democrats, like J. William Fulbright, who I've talked about this before, but, you know, we're just this is going over this. But J. William Fulbright, who is Bill Clinton's mentor, who Bill Clinton in like 2004 went and dedicated a statue that stands out in front of Old Main, J. William Fulbright, a senator from Arkansas. He voted against civil rights. He's to this day considered a Democrat. So is Albert Gore, Al Gore's dad. He voted against civil rights. These were Democrats. They were appealing to their base because they had whipped these people up with racism, with fear and all this stuff, to keep, you know, keep power. It's not new. And, you know, Robert Byrd, I mean, there's all the KKK was Democrats. They were Democrats. There weren't Republican KKK members. It just, that's not how it worked. So what did happen was, and this is the misconception, and I'm glossing over a whole lot, but this I think is what's, because you could really look through the years how Democrats, you have people like Orville Faubus, Arkansas governor, who went to a communist college in Harrison, one of the more racist, known racist places in Harrison, for up until like what, the 90s or something. They had the sign up that said, don't let the sun go down your back or something like that. When you think of Harrison, Arkansas, when you're from Arkansas, when you think of Harrison, Arkansas, you think of racism. And there was a communist school, and Orville Faubus attended it. And there he learned. Because, you know, the communist, when you're talking about, like, the Bolsheviks, and you're talking about Vladimir Lenin, they were all about manipulation for power. It was like the rules for radicals. They taught strategy. Communists back then were very interested in sort of power at all costs, and the gaining of power through the elimination of your enemies. It wasn't that there were two political parties and that democracy should work and we should find a way to work together. Communism is all about just eliminating your political foes. And I know you have some experience with the rules for radicals. You've looked at that a little bit, haven't you, Dave?
Yeah. Yeah. Saul Alinsky, which was, Obama really, President Barack Obama really looked up to him, and he was kind of a mentor of Obama. And if you look up his, rules for radicals, it's a pretty easy, a book out, but you can find abbreviated basically the rules, and a lot of it is, it's basically just communist, like you said, instead of defeating your enemy in the arena of ideas and things, it's basically ways to, take them out by any means possible. It doesn't say, kill them, obviously, but sure. It's basically just taking them out by any means necessary, I guess, influencing other people by, it's basically just lying, saying do the things you do, saying they do it. It's a total, really, it's a psychological, just warfare is what it is. I mean, if you read through it and really kind of start studying it, and it stems from, communism, which is, they're not trying to come up with better ideas of how to do things. I mean, when you look at communism as a whole, millions and millions of people have died in the name of communism or in the way of communism. And it's still, there's still people that think it'll work. We just have to have the right people, just like socialism, which is kind of communism light. I mean, you look at Venezuela right now, those poor people, they were once a very, very rich nation, and now they're just living in hell, more or less. And it's just, it all stems back to communism, really.
Yeah, it's like saying that it's And this shouldn't even be as bad. It's like saying that you should try Nazism again because they just Hitler just didn't do it right. The Holocaust doesn't compare to the people that have died in the name of communism. And there's a big part of you have to understand too, that the way that people have died to communism, because that sort of gets thrown around, the idea that all these people have died. And just like Hitler tried to eliminate the Jews, political dissidents were taken out and shot, were put in the gulags, put in these Siberian prisons by the millions. That did happen. But there was also, after Lenin died and Stalin took power. Stalin was a thug. He was just, at the end of the day, he was just a thug. He was like if Tony Soprano became the president and did things the way that he was used to doing them. So that's what Stalin was. But Stalin actually industrialized. He had like a, I forget what it was, like a 5-year plan, 6-year plan, something like that. It's the 5-year plan, or maybe I'm sure that my old professors would just say, hey, look this shit up before you reread the books before you talk about it. You know what? Fuck it. It doesn't matter really. But he had maybe it was a 7-year plan, something like that. He had a plan to industrialize. America had industrialized, Europe had industrialized, Russia was not industrialized. We're talking about in the early part of the 1930s, and Stalin achieved his plan in like, I think it was maybe like a 7-year plan. He achieved it in 4 years. He actually was able to achieve these massive things because you were taught that the state was the most important thing. There was no religion. There was no you worked all the time. Your kids were raised by somebody whose job it was to raise kids, and they were indoctrinated, and then as soon as they were old enough, they were put in the factories, and that people just died by the millions in an effort to industrialize. There's a book that I read that was just about the experience of an American who went over. His parents were actually professors at a college, and he was taught that socialism was the way and capitalism was going to fail and yada, yada, yada. He went over and became a Russian and worked out in this factory trying to just, I think they did some metal working, and they just didn't have any safety protocol. They didn't have the right tools to do the job. What's that book? It was called like Behind the Urals, I think, because he was in the Ural Mountains or Beyond the Urals, something like that. I think it was Behind the Urals anyway, but they just didn't have any safety protocols. So somebody would be doing a dangerous job with no safety equipment. They would just die doing it. And it was just, hey, next guy up. And they lived in these dormitories where you had, 5 families sharing 1 bedroom. If you wanted to have sex, you had to like go out behind a tree or just very quietly have sex with like a bunch of people around you. But it wasn't about that. There wasn't joy to it. It was just that the state was the most important thing. So the way that people died during communism, there are many different stages of it, but it was just that the individual was not important. And but that's what we were talking about, Orville Faubus. So Orville Faubus is this governor of Arkansas that was had these communist was taught these different communist ideas. And he was the famous Little Rock Nine, the kids that integrated. It was like one of the first Southern schools to try to integrate. And it was, Arkansas was actually seen as a progressive Southern state. A lot of people thought at the time that they tried to integrate Central High School, a lot of people nationally thought Arkansas would probably be the first place where schools would be integrated because we had fairly laxed segregation policies. Arkansas was seen as a fairly progressive state, but Orville Faubus knew, and he actually wrote a book later on in his life. He was elected to the most terms out of any governor of Arkansas. He's a Democrat. I think he was elected like 10 terms as governor of Arkansas. He's the longest governor by a lot. And he's the one that decided to block the students from entering Central High. There were three schools in Little Rock. There was a Horace Mann, which was the black school. There was Hall, which was like the wealthy white, you know, school. And there was Central, which was kind of a like the name says, sort of a centrally located high school. And so they thought that would be the best location. It was really sort of token integration, and it was end up having to be forced by the National Guard. It was the huge sort of standoff that happened. And, you know, he constantly, when he was running, he ran against people that were even more racist than him. He, one of his big opponents was Jim Johnson, who was, I think he was from Searcy. He was like the leader of the White Citizens Brigade. And in Orville Faubus's book later on in life, he said, well, yeah, I used racism to get reelected, but what he argues is, and this is how delusional Democrats are, what he argued was, yes, I was racist, but Jim Johnson would have been way more racist than me. So it was better that I was just kind of racist and stayed in power than I let somebody who was really racist come in who would have done, I don't know what worse you could do than what they tried to do in Little Rock, because they integrated Central, but it was never meaningful. And that was like in the, I think, the 50s. And so you had this integration experiment that just kind of ran out. And then what city planners in Little Rock, under Orville Faubus's direction, city planners just sort of drew the districts where the schools were technically integrated, but they really weren't. Black people still lived and went to the black school. It was so bad, actually, that in the 1980s, there was like a federal judge that came in and was pissed because he'd seen that, you know, the federal government had ordered Little Rock to integrate their high schools in the like late 50s. And all the way up until the 80s, there still was no meaningful integration. So this judge was like, if you went to Little Rock in the 80s, there were kids that had to, you know, ride like 20, 45 minutes to get to school because he forced them to actually integrate these schools. And so what it meant was busing kids from all over the city to schools that were far away from them just to force them to actually integrate. But, you know, that he's a great example. He's somebody who felt like it was in the public interest for him to be in power. So he did bad things, and his justification was that his opponent would have done worse things. So what I want to, and I know I'm getting sidetracked a lot here, but it's just, there's so much to it. That's why I'm not going into details. That's why I'm not sitting here reading to you the exact dates and the exact number of people, whatever, because it's so massive that the details don't matter. Just the general, if you want to look into stuff more, feel free to. I'm giving you enough information to where you can do some of your own research. I always think that's better. I think if you want to really delve into something, me telling you the exact number or the exact date is not, you know, that's not going to get it. I'm giving you enough information that you can look for it yourself. But what I was saying was, what was I saying? Do you remember what I was saying? It's
yeah, you're talking about. Yeah, you were talking about Faubus and Little Rock integration.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, it was his idea of that he's sort of the better of the two evils, and this just kind of ties in with what I was trying to get at with what really happened with the parties. The parties didn't flip. Like Republican politicians never became Democrats, and Democrats never became. There was never a time where like the Republicans that passed civil rights decided that they were going to be Democrats, and the Democrats that voted against civil rights decided Republicans. That never happened. The Democrats that voted against civil rights are still very prominent in a lot of people's minds, Democrats, and you know the Republicans that voted for and are the reason why we passed civil rights are still Republicans. What did happen was the base changed. It had nothing to do with racism. But this, and I wish that I hadn't lost my train of thought because I wanted to be a little more poignant with it. But what happened was you had Southerners, people in Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama, people that were Democrats, but they were conservatives. They had conservative values, family values. They were Christian. Well, post civil rights, the Democrat Party sort of realized that they needed to sort of, now that black people were this huge new base of people that could vote, and black people and women, the Democrats immediately decided that even though they had been the force holding them down, they had been the people that voted against the civil rights, they wanted to try to expand their power by going after black voters. But also what you had was, after civil rights, after the Vietnam War, you had in the 1970s this counterculture that formed as a, sort of an answer, I guess, to JFK, LB Johnson, punctuated by Richard Nixon. Now, I know JFK and LB Johnson were both Democrats, but they wouldn't be considered Democrats today. And Kennedy was assassinated. If he hadn't been, he probably wouldn't be remembered so fondly, because people don't blame him for the Vietnam War, but he and his Robert McNamara and these people, they're the ones that got us involved in Vietnam. LB Johnson doesn't even really take the blame that he should, but it all sort of leads to Richard Nixon. It's kind of funny too, because Richard Nixon actually had a ton of liberal, you know, women's liberation, you know, sort of expansion of civil rights, and these things happened under Nixon. But whenever Nixon went down with this Watergate, there was this counterculture, there was this building now with minorities and women having the right to vote. The Democrat Party started going, throwing off their Christian values, their family values, and not that trying to appeal to minorities, because minorities still to this day are very conservative. So, but I guess the idea of the Democrats had created this heavy conservative Christian Southern base that they had used. They had been told their whole lives that black people were a threat to them, that it was scientifically proven. And then after civil rights, after a certain amount of time, the Democrats start trying to appeal to that base. They also, you know, when you have the way that prayer was taken out of school, the way the Roe v. Wade and different things, what you had during the 70s and into the 80s, up until Richard Nixon, was Democrats starting to lose their conservative Christian base in the South. Now, on the one hand, these were the people that they had been whipping up with fear for, you know, 70 years, or, well, you know, yeah, 70, 80 years. They, plus maybe 100 years, they had been whipping this base up for generations by using fear of minorities as a way to gain power. All of a sudden, they're abandoning a lot of these values to try to appeal to this new minority group. There are so many parallels to today, because it's what the Democrat Party now is trying to use illegal immigration, and even legal immigration. They're trying to use that as a way to build their base. They're abandoning the middle class white Americans in doing so. And what happens is, once the Democrats abandon you as a base, then you're labeled racist, because that way, if you're going to leave the party, now you're quarantined. So they had been trying to appeal to you, They appealed to your father. They appealed to your father's father or your mother's mother, whatever. But then whenever they started turning away and you became disillusioned and they knew you weren't going to vote for them, you are now a racist. That way, the people they are appealing to don't get any idea to talk to you about what your opinions are. You're the disenfranchised Democrats, but you're of no use anymore. So you're a racist. So you're a bigot. You're all these different things. You know, Hillary Clinton was against gay marriage. So was Obama. These people didn't come around till it became politically fashionable. And so somebody who had spoke for the majority of her career against gay marriage, and what are the people she was talking to, a certain base at that time? Well, what are those people now to her? They're homophobes.
You know, the deplorables.
They're people that she had appealed to, and then when it became apparent that they were no longer being a source of her power, they were all the things that she had been, you know, to appeal to them. They're very slippery. And this is the thing, this test, this study that Shapiro was talking about, it really ties into this, because that's the way it is. Democrats pander to people to try to court them in an effort to expand their power. Inevitably, by doing it, they disenfranchise, because when you use fear as a tactic, I don't think that Republicans use fear. I really don't. I don't think that, you know, Trump is using fear when he says we need to secure our borders. Now, he is using, I don't know if it's, see, the thing is like when Trump says they're coming to try to take your guns, that's reality. So that's not using fear. That's letting people know the consequences of their actions, right? But when Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama says that Donald Trump is going to literally cause, or Bernie Sanders, and people say people are literally going to die, that's fear. That's hyperbole. So if Donald Trump says we don't need to let people just illegally invade our country, that's something that truly happens. People are all the time trying to get across our borders for all kinds of different reasons. So that really is happening. But whenever the media tells you that Donald Trump is racist and he's literally Hitler, that's a lie. That's fear. So there's no equivalent. When people say, well, Donald Trump is using fear, well, he's not. He's talking about the reality, the tough reality of certain issues. But, you know, he's not doing near the shit that Obama did, putting reporters in jail. Obama was much tougher on the border when it was in vogue to be, when he thought that's what his base wanted. They're panderers. They're constantly trying to appeal to the base, and they always have been. They've always used racism. They've always tried to label anybody that doesn't agree with them. You know, the sad thing is, most of the time, the people that they're trying to label, at one time they were trying to pander to. So, you know, if Hillary Clinton can label people that are against gay marriage as homophobes, well, then she was homophobic. You know, Hillary Clinton says some fucking racist shit all the time. Am I lying, Dave? I've gone past the history portion, so, you know, feel free to, you know, jump in there too. But I think Hillary Clinton is probably, and definitely Barack Obama's a racist. But Barack Obama's a racist motherfucker. He is a bigoted, ignorant, racist piece of shit. That's the reality of it. Am I lying?
No, I don't think you are at all. I mean, Hillary Clinton, just look up Hillary Clinton and Robert Byrd. You know, he is one of her mentors. He's also heavily involved and outspoken supporting the KKK. I mean, he was a member there, and he has quite a few quotes and things he has done in his political career, you know, backing the Ku Klux Klan, and she's, you know, she raves about him all the time. Another interesting fact was, you know, Obama went to his little, I guess it was funeral. Man, it was early on in his presidency. I always thought that was kind of, I don't know, interesting. Like they were praising, you know, this guy that, that was involved with the KKK, and then they turn around and start complaining about the KKK, you know? So I don't know. It's a interesting, when you start diving into all this stuff and you start reading, you know, even recent history of what people say and then what they actually do is quite telling and astounding that, you know, at the bare minimum, they're just a bunch of liars.
Well, and you know, what I was trying to get at a little bit at the beginning, and I'm always trying to do these and get a little bit more concise and not be quite so scatterbrained, but Martin Luther King, his name is invoked constantly by these different so-called civil rights leaders. But what he wanted for America, you know, I think he would be embarrassed. I think he would be greatly hurt at the way his name is invoked by people who are as racist and hateful. Again, the Democrat Party, you put out tons of propaganda basically saying that black people were inherently evil, they were inferior, they were, you know, all these things. And somebody like Martin Luther King, who grew up in this heavily segregated environment, and what he thought was, well, look, there's all this misinformation. I know that what the media, I know that what the politicians are saying about my culture, about my race, is wrong. So maybe if we just get out there, we educate ourselves, we show people through, you know, he's the one that said, if a white person's walking, because if you were black, and this is, believe me, this is fucking bullshit. It's infuriating to think that anybody ever thought like this. But again, these were Democrats. But you know, if a black person was walking down the street, a white person was walking down the street, the black person had to cross the street to try to stay out of the path, right? And so, you know, Martin Luther King said, "Do it, cross the street." But if we educate ourselves, we keep our we learn how to read, all these things that we will show them as time goes on, that we are equal, that we're not inferior, we're not evil, we're not all these things that they try to label us as. And it's the same stuff that the Democrats are trying to do today. It's the exact same stuff. They're trying to say that white people are inherently evil. You know, nobody's inherently fucking evil. It has nothing to do with your skin color. Again, people, if you listen to Martin Luther King, I have a dream that one day people will judge not by the color of their skin, but by, you know, by the content, what is it, content of their character, content of their soul, whatever. It has nothing to do with your skin color. You know, when Jay-Z says, I got to have like a black judge to represent me. Well, why? It shouldn't fucking matter. You don't want a black judge. You want a fair judge. Their color shouldn't have anything to do with it. It always kind of boggled my mind how just the idea that you can only be represented by somebody who looks like you. That stuff breaks down when you're somebody like me, because I have dark skin. I look like a minority, but I did a DNA test and I'm like, I'm not a whole, I mean, the highest percentage I think was like was like 34. So I'm not a majority anything, but the highest percentage I am is, number one is German. The second one, unfortunately, is French. And then after that is like Filipinos, like the third. And then I've got some like Italian and Spanish, and so I have this dark skin, though, because my grandmother was also Czechoslovakian. So I have some from the Filipino dark skin, but my dad was dark skin, and his dad was German. His mom was Czechoslovakian. So I look sort of foreign, but really, if you look at the sum of my parts, I'm, you know, probably more Caucasian, as it were. So who represents me? Well, white people that are brown, you know, tannish white people. It's just, it's so stupid. Like, because just because somebody looks like you doesn't mean that they have had the same experience as you. Now, there are certain people that share a common existence, but are you telling me that a black person that grows up in New York City is in any way similar to a black person that, you know, grows up in Boise, Idaho? So the black person in New York knows exactly what that Boise, Idaho black person's experience is purely because they're both black? You know, that's fucking stupid. It's dumb. And you only can play that political, you know, the identity politics game so far. I think we talked about this a little bit last time, but it dies down whenever you get outside of minorities. Because if a white person were to say, look, I need a white judge because I got to have somebody. And truly, though, if anything, it is getting to the point to where if you're a white person, you wouldn't want to be judged by some minority judges because they have an agenda. I mean, there are some minority judges out there, black, Hispanic, different, whatever, that I guarantee you they come down harder on, like, white, anybody who looks white and privileged. And in those cases, it would probably be better for them to say, look, I would rather have a white judge because that person might at least be unbiased. But it's what they blame, you know, accuse other people of doing. But I guarantee you that you don't have white judges that are going around treating white people better. I mean, you know, that you may have your few outliers of white racist judges, but I'd be willing to wager that as far as, like, racism goes, it's pretty colorblind. I bet there's some racist white judges out there. I bet there's some racist black judges. I bet there's some racist Hispanic judges. I bet there's some fucking racist Asian judges out there. And what people kind of neglect in this identity politics thing too is your personal experience. Because if you're a black judge that grew up in a place where, because if you're a judge, then you would have been a lawyer first. So at some point, you've probably went to high school, you went to college, then you went to law school, then you were a lawyer for a long time, and then you became a judge. So your experience might be different than, you know, say if you were a black and grew up in an affluent sort of privileged area, than a black person that grew up in an area where they were exposed to racism, or they were bullied by white people, or stuff was lorded over them. That person, that black judge may have a bias, may have a chip on their shoulder, but it doesn't come purely from the color of their skin. It comes from their experiences. So there's complexity too with racism. If you were a white kid that went to an all black school, you might not look favorable on all white people, but it would have less to do with the fact that you were born white and more to do with maybe you were, bullied, or maybe you were treated differently. Maybe you were treated as something lower or different or whatever. When it comes down to people that are racist, people that are bigots, people that judge races as a whole, it's so complex. It goes even racism goes so far beyond what's skin deep. Just the idea that your skin color is a precursor for any judgment of you, it goes against all wisdom. You know what I'm saying? How many times have you heard, don't judge a book by their cover? A Freudian slip there. But how many times have you heard that you cannot tell the content of somebody by how they look or the color of their skin or whether they're a man or a woman or whatever? But all that shit's getting thrown out the window right now because the modern Democrat Party wants you to say, well, look, I know that Barack Obama's policies killed the economy. I know that for 8 years of Obama, you know, there was a lot of unrest. But look, hey, at least you're not white, because fuck, those people don't get it, man. They're just privileged. They're trying to fucking keep you down. But I tell you what, you know, you are a better person because you're black. You know, it's stupid. It's as stupid as the old fucking white bigots that thought they were better because they were white. Mark Lamont Hill is no better than fucking David Duke. They're the same person. They're a person who is so shallow that they judge you by the color of your skin, the fucking pigment of your skin. And what I think the Democrats don't sort of understand, I guess, is the more that you have people like me, the more that you have people that have like darker skin pigment, but it's not necessarily tied to like, how do you appeal to me? I'm not Mexican, but I look kind of, you know, Hispanic, but you know, I don't fall in any category. I don't have an identity. I don't have a group, but I'm dark skinned. I'm not technically white, but then I am technically white. So how do you appeal to me? You can't put me in a group. So, you know, if I want to come along for a ride, that's fine. I could probably pass for a person of color. But if not, then I'm just a racist bigot like the rest of them. And you can even speak to more. You're white. You know, the idea of how the Democrats want to label you. How do you feel that the Democrats assume that somehow you had it better? Or that you're racist just purely how you look? How does that make you feel, Dave?
I just wish they'd tell me if, like, this white privilege thing, if there's, like, a card, a membership card I need, and where I would turn it in to cash in on this, you know, white privilege that they keep telling me that I have, because I haven't experienced it yet. So,
oh yeah, you have it. It's systemic. Everything in your life.
If somebody could actually tell me how to take advantage of this white privilege, I would greatly appreciate it. If Hillary finds time between her and Bill's little tour that they're on. You know, if somebody at CNN could publish some sort of bullshit article to tell me how to, you know, cash in on my white privilege, I would really like to know. It's stupid, man, that whole thing. And I grew up around, you know, quite a few black people, and it was never that big of a deal. I mean, yeah, there was racism. There's racism, you know, all kinds of places. You're never going to get rid of it all, because it's just, you know, there's always people that think that way. And especially now, you're bombarded with it, whether it's, you know, against black people or white people or whoever. And so, I mean, it wasn't a big deal growing up. I mean, I had black friends. I had black, you know, people I went to school with that I didn't like. It wasn't because they were black. It was just because they were assholes, you know? So, I mean, it's void. All of their talking points are void of real life in a lot of ways. You know, you can find specific cases of racism anywhere, and especially in the past, but it just doesn't account for reality. You know, I mean, and that's kind of the danger of, you know, you get into, you know, media, whether it be social media or even politics, when specific parties will just push an agenda of racism, you get people believing it. You know, it's easy to when you're down and out for whatever reason, it's easy to blame someone else, you know, and that's where I feel racism falls into. Well, I'm not doing well, or, and I got fired from a job, or, you know, things just aren't working for me right now. It's easy to blame someone else. And that's kind of what I feel a big reason racism is used as a political tool. It's basically to get, you know, a constituency of votes somehow.
Well, it's like if you're black and you look at like a typical Donald Trump supporter and you see an enemy because they're some privileged person, but then you look at Madonna and you see an ally, you don't have a grip on reality. You know, these Hollywood actors and actresses, athletes, these different people, they have Colin Kaepernick is one of the most privileged people that you could ever meet. You know what I'm saying? He's had a privilege his whole life because right out of college, the guy was making millions of dollars. You know, Madonna and these Rosie O'Donnell and all these people, they have been privileged for most of their lives. Even if maybe they had a rough childhood, which a lot of them didn't. A lot of them are where they are because their parents were rich anyway. Well, a lot of those pop stars, you know, the Britney Spears of the world, their parents were doing okay. That's how they got to where they were, because their parents had the money to throw behind them and to try to put them into the, which I would never want to do. But all that aside, if you look at the average American and you see an enemy, but you look at Hollywood and see an ally, you know, you're not in touch with actual reality, because you have way more in common with the average white Trump supporter. You have a lot more in common with them than you do with Robert De Niro. You don't have anything in common with Robert De Niro. He hasn't lived like you for most of his life. If he did live like you at all, it was for a short time. You know, he's what, 70 years old now? So maybe the first 20 years, maybe the first 15 years, maybe if he had a hard life, he did. He lived kind of like you, but he doesn't remember what that's like. You know, the man has been exalted and put on a pedestal. He has lived at the highest pinnacle of privilege, of money and respect and yada, 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 yada. And what does he do? He gets to do things that most people would give almost anything to do. That's privilege. So, you know, if you want to start this socialist, then Robert De Niro needs to fork over his fortune to a bunch of other people. Start there. If everybody in Hollywood started distributing their money, do you know how many people that they could give a $30,000 a year base? You know how many people, if Johnny Depp lived meagerly and just if he lived on $30,000 a year but still was in movies, blockbuster movies every year, do you know how many people he could support? How many people are on the street right now? Do you know how many people, Rosie O'Donnell, you know how many people that Ellen DeGeneres, if she wanted to, could, if she just lived like somebody who made $30,000 a year, do you know how many other people that she could also give that lifestyle to that don't have it now? But they would never, ever in a million fucking years give you any of their money. They don't donate a whole lot of it to you. You're never going to fucking get a red cent of it. You could write them and beg them, and they wouldn't give you one fucking dime. Those are the people that are privileged. Not some person that lives next door to you that supports Trump and happens to be white. Those people live your life. They go to work. They live paycheck to paycheck. They're trying to pay off debt of some bad decisions that they made. They have kids too. They're just trying to get by too. You should be working with them, because that's where your power lies. You know, that's where you unite with people with a similar plight. And then you elect somebody who represents you, not because they're the same color as you, you fucking retard, but because they understand your basic needs and the goals that you want. So you represent them based on merit. You based on intent. You don't elect Maxine fucking Waters, who is as corrupt as they come, just because she's the black candidate and the Democrat, because she's not going to make your life better. She doesn't give a fuck about your life. She's too busy enriching herself and her family and making a buffoon of herself. People forgot how this system of democracy works, and they get so frustrated with it. But do you know why you're frustrated? You're frustrated because your party, the party that you elect to represent you, don't give a fuck about you. They don't fucking care about you. They want your vote. That's it. Do you know why they don't care about you? Because they don't represent you. Do you know why they don't represent you? Because you elected them to do shit that doesn't matter. You elected them because they said that the other guy was racist. That's not a good reason. You elected them because they look like you and they try to talk like what they think you want to hear them talk like. You know, that's not a good recipe. You should look for a candidate that says, hey, look, I understand what it's like making minimum wage. Or I understand what it's like making $30,000 a year. I understand what that's like. I think that, you know, we should have a better bus system so that if you don't have a car, you have a way to get to work. I think that we should put more money into the infrastructure of the city so that there are more businesses, so that there's more competition, so that wages go up, so that there's more capitalism, so that you have an opportunity if you want to open a business, that we make it to where the banks have an incentive to loan you the money, and that you have the kind of environment where you could make open a business and potentially thrive. Or if not, somebody else opens a business and they hire you for more money than what you're making now. That's how your life gets better. It doesn't get better because when you look in the mirror, you see the same color as when you look at your politician on the internet. That's fucking stupid. And we're being led around like morons. And the thing is that they've been leading us around like morons for the longest time. And not enough people get together and fucking do anything about it because they have infected you on every level. They're in your elementary school. They're in your junior high. They're in your high school. Damn sure in your college if you happen to go, but they're everywhere around you. They're at your work. They want you to self-censor. They're on the social network. They own the big tech companies. They're constantly bombarding you from the TV and from Hollywood and the movies. They're bombarding you with the comedy specials that come out. They're bombarding you with everything to keep you in line with thinking that the shit that's not important. How many of you people that would never in a million years get an abortion vote for somebody because they say they're pro-abortion because you think that that's just the smart, that's the sensible modern thing to do? Don't elect somebody based on their stance on abortion. It doesn't matter to you. Now, maybe if it does, maybe if that's the big sticker, maybe if you feel like being able to murder your baby is a big deal for you, well, then you should. But if you're just somebody who has 2-3 kids and you're just trying to get by and you'd like for your life to be better, you'd like for your kids to have a better life than you, vote for somebody based on something that's important, not what makes you feel good because you've been made to feel guilty by a party that is using fear. Again, you can't say that what Trump does is fear. When he tells you that the Democrats want to come take your guns, they want to take your fucking guns. That's not a lie. But whenever CNN calls Trump a racist and say he's assaulting democracy, that's a lie. He's not a racist. He never was before he ran for president. He's not trying to assault democracy. They can't give you a real example. They say he's an assault on democracy. Well, what do you mean? Well, I mean, he's after us. Well, yeah, that's not sufficient. You're after him. What are you fucking? I'm poking the bear. Why is the fucking bear attacking me? It's just infuriating, man. And we have this shit that goes on with fucking Mueller is just this silent coup that has been going on. And we have so many people that think they're good people based on hollow shit, based on guilt, based on fear, based on skin pigment, based on issues that you will never deal with in your life. We got to start putting in people that matter. We got to stop electing the racist fucking bigots. We got to stop listening to the Don Lemons and the Anderson fucking Coopers and the Chris fucking Cuomos. You know? And hey, are there people on the right that don't get it either? I mean, yeah, but they're not peddling in racism. They're usually trying really, really, really hard to not even kind of sound racist. There's these people that are trying to give you the news with, you know, and if they don't fall into the fucking deep narrative that the left wants, they're labeled far-right conservatives. So Fox News is always like Ben Shapiro stepping over itself to try to be a little bit unfair to the right, just enough so that the left can't just pigeonhole you. And with Ben Shapiro, they still do. With Fox News, they still do. They're not appeased. CNN is not a fucking appeased whenever Fox News sides with Jim Acosta. You know, this is just what they have to, it's the sacrifice that they have to put on the altar. Ben Shapiro has to be extra critical of the president at times because that's the sacrifice he has to put on the altar so that they just don't completely, you know, stop having him on their shows. It's infuriating. But I could go on all night, but I think that we've kind of made our point here. I know it's been a little bit convoluted and not necessarily a straight line. I know it's probably sounded more like just somebody raving with a kid that won't sleep in their bed hanging off of them. But, you know, I think that's what this podcast is different. I don't want to give you this concise idea that's full of all the details that you'll need so that you can go to somebody else and just recite. Because I doubt very seriously that somebody could listen to this podcast and go recite verbatim. Now, I listen to Ben Shapiro, and if somebody brings up that topic, I can recite verbatim, and I can sound just like a little Ben Shapiro. But I would rather give you as whatever it sounds, I would rather give you the vague details and go, what he said kind of interests me, but it didn't really go into it a lot. Didn't seem like he knew the details, but hey, but you know what? I'd like to look it up and maybe find out for myself. And then you do the research and then you happen to read it and go, that's kind of what he said, but it's a little bit different than that. And here's my take on it. And then you form your own opinion. I don't want to tell you how to think. I just want to get you started on like an idea. I want to give you some facts, but I don't want to feed you an argument. You know, if you hear some of this stuff that sounds interesting that I'm talking about, like the historical timeline, but I'm not just delving into all the technicalities and the numbers, do it on your own. And that way you'll know it when somebody tries to challenge you, then you'll have more than just memorizing what I said. You'll truly have read and comprehended and understand it and know that it's the same old recycled bullshit that people are not smart enough. And when they do get smart enough, they just get, you know, they get sent to the gulag. They get labeled racist. They become the deplorables, the untouchables, these people that don't have a use anymore. So they're racist, bigot, homophobe, fucking xenophobe, fucking bullshit. I just wonder what other words they're going to make up and use for this, you know, next presidential fucking cycle. I'm just getting so sick of the socialist fucking language and the narratives and the bullshit. Dave, you got anything you want to go into for you?
No, I think it's... Here? I think it's a good point about not being specific in this podcast, simply because I think critical thinking is a skill or a something that has to be worked on. It's like working out, you know, it's like throwing a baseball or kicking a soccer ball or something. You know, you have to work at it, and it's not being taught or pushed, you know, to younger people especially anymore. And it's something that's really good to have, is critical thinking skills and just being in reality as well. You know, there's a lot of things that, you know, aren't really reality. You know, it's not everyday real life for a lot of people. It's just somebody's bullshit opinion that lives in a bubble. And so I'm glad you pointed that out about the podcast. I think that's important.
Well, it's like, you know, I've thought about when I know I want to talk about something, because I'll make little notes throughout the day. And I've thought, well, should I do the refresh my memory on this? And it's like, okay, well, then what would I do? I would, once I wanted to start talking about something, I would then start to read something to you that I read off, you know, whatever, whether it was little excerpts or whatever. I would start reading something. What am I trying to do? Am I trying to prove to you that I know what I'm talking about? I know what I'm talking about. I understand it enough to the point that I have formed my own opinion on it. And so I'm telling you what the product of my own research is. And so, yeah, I think it's important that you do your own and you understand it. I've had, in, you know, cases before, I've had like friends of mine that would deal with liberals all the time, and they would call me and be like, well, hey, when they say this, what do I say? And I would give them, you know, news articles. Well, here, read this. Well, I mean, just tell me what it said. Just tell me exactly what to say. It's like, how weak is that? Because what if they ask you a question? What are you going to do? Well, hey, I got to go to the bathroom again. Hold on. I'll be right back. You just fucking hold that thought, motherfucker. I know what I'm going to say, but I'll be right back. You know, no, I'm going to give you the background information. Hey, me giving you an article is me giving you the argument. It's a very small refresher, because you should know more about it than that. But I get it. There's a lot of people that don't want to dedicate the time, or don't have the time to dedicate to sit there and read all the vast knowledge out there. So, but you know, that's why if you hear something that anybody says that's interesting, go research it. Go find it out for yourself, because that's how you're. Arguments become strong. And then when somebody starts saying, well, what about this? What about that? That's, you know, critical thinking is not just learning things that reaffirm what you say, but it's also trying to think of the logical argument against what you're saying, and trying to understand how to, you know, when I, one of the, because I love talking to debating with people. And for years and years, I would debate about Christianity. And for a long time when I was younger, my faith was so strong. I thought you just always had to have strong faith, and that you never questioned God, that it was disrespectful, it was blasphemy. But then I had a pastor say, doubt, that's how you become stronger in your beliefs, is when you do doubt, because this is the truth. The truth doesn't change if you question it. That's a good way to tell when somebody is full of shit. They don't like it when you ask them questions. Most liberals don't like being asked basic questions, because they don't critically think about it. They're regurgitating what somebody else told them to say. They read fucking HuffPost or Vox or whatever. They watch CNN. They just, blah, 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 blah. Mark Lamont said that you're racist. Well, what makes me racist? Well, fuck you. Fuck you, asshole. I don't even want to fucking talk to you. You're racist. Well, that's not a reason. You know, doubt. Doubt yourself. Doubt conservative policies. Doubt Trump. But then try to disprove your own theories. And it forces you to learn about them and go, well, you know what? This is why it's true. The truth does not change. It's not subjective. I know people love to throw that in like Trump's face, but Trump is a salesman. So he's not lying to you about the important things. He's just trying to paint a picture. It was the biggest crowd ever. Well, was it really the biggest crowd ever? Well, it doesn't fucking matter. It was a big crowd. He speaks in hyperbole in a lot of ways because he's a salesman. That's how he got to where he is. It doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? It really doesn't fucking matter. But that's not like Obama saying that nobody in his administration was ever indicted. You had criminals in his – Hillary Clinton was his fucking Secretary of State. Eric Holder was held in contempt of Congress. Loretta Lynch to this day is dodging Congress. The you know, it's an out and out lie. Obama is not just trying to speak in a little bit of hyperbole. He's trying to take credit for shit that he didn't do, and I despise him for it. But it also just makes me feel bad. I know he can't believe that stuff. He's just for a lot of part. He's just trying to fucking troll the right. He sees it's funny because it's like Obama sees how Trump trolls. He's like watching him. He's like, I'm gonna do that. you know how much it would piss them off if I did that, Michael. I mean Michelle. I'm gonna act like Trump, and then we'll see. We'll see. I bet Fox News loses their shit. I bet Rush Limbaugh talks about me. So you know, and you can say I'm a Trump apologist, but again, you know, Trump's not lying about you know. If you want to just say I'm full of shit, that's fine. I am full of shit mostly, but. What I'm trying to get at with the way Trump talks, there is a New York Times article written, and I want to say it was like written back in the 80s, because Trump was a New Yorkers used to love Trump. He did a lot for the city. The New York Times used to praise him and tell him he should run for president. But they talked about how he sort of embellishes, but that it's not really lying. It's just how he talks to people. And he's not doing it in a malicious way. He's just, that's the way he taught it. This was the greatest thing ever. You're the best. You're the best ever. Everybody says you're the best. You're the best. Everybody says it. You're the best. Hey, we have the best people. We really do. Everybody says so. You know, it's the way he talks. He's not in his mind going, once they think that they're the best, then I've got them, you know. But Obama, somebody like that, is so disingenuous that he is trying to lie to you. He is trying to manipulate you. He doesn't think you're the best. It's really hard for him to say that. And he has to do it with purpose. Trump believes it. At the moment he says it, it's like my little brother with women. He loves them all. He really believes that he loves you when he says it to you. Trump, when he's shaking your hand, telling you you're the best, hey, you're the best ever. I you're the best person I've ever met. In that moment, he believes it. Yeah. So anyway, I think that's a whole nother podcast. We'll go ahead and call it there. Unless you have anything else, Dave.
No, man. No.
All right. Well, signing off for Glenn Keck and MAGA Dave. Thanks for joining us, and hope you had a good Thanksgiving, and we'll be back with you next week. Have a good one.